You're listening to ABC Radio Perth
with Gillian O'Shaughnessy.
We're quite selective, so I've had the pleasure of working in a number of countries across the world, and by travelling there, I really came to see the wide range of species that they target over there compared to Western Australia, where we tend to target, say, three or four select fish like your pink snapper and your West Australian jewfish.
Usually fish that don't taste fishy.
Yes, true. Fish that don't taste fishy, so we avoid the sardines and things like that.
It's interesting, isn't it? And I know we had a great conversation a while ago about the so-called wild salmon, where there is masses of us off the coast. Is that the kind of thing that you're thinking about?
No, so what we're trying to promote are things that you'd normally chuck back, like your WA salmon, and then also the fishier fish like the sardines that people avoid.
Yeah.
And even things like Western king wrasse, which a lot of people would probably be horrified to hear that we can make taste good.
What is the Western king wrasse?
So Western king wrasse is actually one of the more common fish species on the Western Australian coast. So it's found as far as Ningaloo all the way down past Albany. And very few people would catch and keep that fish, I would say.
Why, Jordan?
I think because they really haven't experimented with different ways to cook that fish. So if you use that as a stock, for example, or you turn it into fish cakes, then the flavour actually doesn't make such a huge difference, and you can still get these really delicious dishes out of it.
So tell us a little bit about the in scale to tail. You want fishes and foodies to think a little bit differently. So tell us about the philosophy of the book.
Yeah, so what we're trying to encourage people to do is first consume a broader range of species. So whatever you catch, try experimenting with a couple of the recipes that we've got in the book. And the second thing we want to do is make sure that when you do catch fish, you're eating as much of it as you can. So when you fillet a fish, you're generally wasting about half of that fish. And a lot of people will throw the head and the frame in the bin, which we feel is a real shame because, again, if you can use those parts of the fish to make a stock, you can use that fish stock in a number of really amazing dishes like luxes, and it really brings out a beautiful flavour for those sort of dishes.
So scale to tail, Jordan, is there any part of the fish that you cannot use?
Not really. Yeah, you can. There are recipes with the actual scales. There's recipes with the heads. We've even got some recipes with the swim bladder that Paul Wisco, the chef from Fervor, uses, so pretty much anything you can eat.
What do you do with the scales, Jordan?
Well, you can actually crisp them up and then eat them for certain species. So, yeah, they're quite good. There's a number of recipes out there with pink snapper where they utilise the scales and crisp them up and deep fry them to get them crispy.
Yum. That doesn't even sound like you're really trying hard to be environmentally friendly, Jordan. That just sounds yummy.
Well, that was the problem I had, I suppose. I work in conservation, but I also really like to eat the things that I study. So this is my way of giving back and ensuring that we are sustainable with our fisheries.
Jordan Gertzer, our guest on ABC Radio Perth, From Scale to Tail, this book he has co-authored with Paul, a local chef, Paul Iskoff, just to encourage you, give you some ideas to use the whole fish, to both use a broader range of fish. And we're really lucky here in Western Australia, aren't we, Jordan, in terms of what we've got access to?
Yes, definitely. So a number of the places that I've travelled over in Africa, for example, their fish stocks are in far worse a state than ours. So we're actually really quite lucky to have quite well-managed fisheries. But that's not to say that these things could potentially change in the future with more impacts with things like global warming. So if we can, take some of the pressure off by using more of the fish that we catch, then that's certainly going to go a long way to helping out.
Are fish like leather jackets of any use in the kitchen, can I ask, Jordan?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Leather jacket, some people really love the flavour. It has a really flaky white flesh. And again, that's a really good one to cook whole and just pick off the bone.
What about, do you have to be careful with some fish? Are there some toxic species found in WA?
So it's funny you say that. And I learnt this lesson when working over in Fiji, that there's a number of fish that were actually listed as being poisonous, but they ate absolutely all of them. So provided you know how to deal with some of those fish, which are often your blowfish and stuff, you can actually eat them. Now, I wouldn't recommend going out there and trying to eat blowfish yourself, but there's very, very few fish that are poisonous out there. And as long as you can look in some of the recreational guides, and they're going to point you towards those species. So the vast, vast majority of them are perfectly fine to eat.
There are a lot of international influences in the book from places like Brazil. There was a gorgeous recipe from Brazil, which I was really interested in. I'll try and find it. But a lot of international influences. Is that because they've been using their better habits, perhaps, in using the whole of the fish?
Yes, certainly. So I've got a great story in the book for one of the recipes, which is called the Coro Kikonda, and that was from my travels again in Fiji, where I decided to cook for them because the lovely ladies in the village always did the cooking for us. So I thought I'd try to give back and cook for them one day, and my cooking involved filleting a fish. And what ended up happening is the whole village crowded around and were wondering what on earth I was doing filleting this fish, because basically every fish they catch, they cook whole and consume absolutely everything. And they really do that because historically they need this fish to survive, whereas, again, we're quite lucky over here and we get to fish recreationally.
Is a Brazilian stew called moqueca, is that right?
Yes, that's the one. Unfortunately, I haven't been to Brazil, but that was just an inspiration because it used the fish stock. And we tried to put in a lot of recipes that use fish stock because you can make the fish stock from the head and the bones of a fish, which are generally thrown away.
Abalone was an interesting one, and I know it's highly sought after, but I think lots of people don't know how to cook it or feel comfortable cooking it. What do you do with that?
There's a number of things with abalone, and this one comes with a bit of a warning because we wouldn't normally put abalone in a sustainable seafood book. But there's some really great initiatives down in Augusta that is actually starting to aquaculture abalone. So this is probably the first example of abalone that you can call sustainable. And elsewhere in the wild, abalone has been quite overfished. Mm. But, yeah, if you're wanting to cook abalone, the real key is to tenderise it. So basically beating it as hard as you can with a meat mallet or something like that, or cooking it slowly, which is what Paul Isco of Fervor does in this example.
I am a great fan of the anchovy, Jordan, and I actually don't like them if you fish them out of the jar and just eat them as a solid thing, but I use them in all my pasta sauces where they dissolve and those sort of things, or an anchovy butter or a rub on a roast lamb, because they're just delicious like that. I like what you've done with anchovy chips.
Yeah, the anchovy fries are really delicious. And that recipe went in because it was a bit of an inspiration from a conservationist called Patricia Mudgeloof. Mm. And what she did was help to convert what was the world's biggest fishery of the Peruvian anchovy from something that basically was used in fish meal. And fish meal is generally used as a fertiliser or for fish feed and aquaculture, and is a very low-value product. So what she did was went around and similar to what I'm trying to do here and worked with some amazing chefs to show that if you cook these fish and you cook them properly, you can actually make them taste really delicious. And she helped convert that fishery from fish meal into food fish, which really increases the value of the product and means they don't need to catch as much. So that was the world's largest fishery, and it was in peril because of being overfished. And by converting them to a food fish, it actually helped to save that fishery. So, yeah, really amazing example there and something that I wanted to get in the book.
So it can be done.
Yeah, it can. It certainly can be done.
What about crayfish, those sort of shelled species? How are you using them in that regard?
Yeah, so the crayfish is a good one, and I love catching crayfish myself off Rottnest Island. So I get out and scuba dive for them as much as I can, not so much in the winter, more in the summer. But what I found was that with the crayfish I'd catch, you'd basically take the head and the guts off and you'd throw that in the bin. And again, that's over 50% of the weight of that crayfish, which is a really huge waste. So instead of doing that, you can turn that into a stock and cook it down with a heap of vegetables. And then you can freeze that stock and keep it in your freezer for quite a few months and just put it in any dish that needs a fish stock. So a paella, for example, it's amazing in a laksa. And the crayfish flavour that that adds to the dish is a real winner.
Now, I'm also interested, Jordan, in you talk about in the foreword, there's a lot of, you know, you might go out to a restaurant and they will put on their menu something like snapper, but it might be very hard to tell without asking a few extra questions whether it's a sustainable kind of species or not. There's a whole world in there under that one word. Can you explain that a little more?
Yeah, so much to my wife's dismay, I embarrass her constantly when I go out to restaurants by asking exactly what the fish is that we're eating. But I think it's something that we should all be doing, because if a restaurant says that it's snapper, it could be one of 10 different species, and those 10 different species can vary quite a lot in how vulnerable they are to overfishing. And probably the most extreme example is with shark. And quite often a fish and chip shop will just say they serve shark, but that could be a gummy shark, which is quite a sustainable shark to eat, or it could be a hammerhead shark, which is actually listed as vulnerable to extinction. So there's quite a big change in the different species, and if you're just generalising and saying you're eating shark, then you could be eating something that's in a bit of trouble versus something that's doing quite well.
So you just advise...
If we ask, that'll help things. Yeah,
just ask the question.
Yeah, just ask and try and be polite. You don't want to offend the waiter, and it's not normally the waiter's fault. So
sure.
See if they can ask the chef or the owner, and hopefully they can give you a bit more information.
Brilliant work, Jordan. It's a great book. Now, where can people get it?
Yeah, so it's freely available and it's hosted on the Wreckfish website. Or alternatively, we've started a Facebook page called Scale to Tail. And we did that because a lot of our recipes are crowdsourced throughout the book from fishers themselves. So, and we'd really like to get some more inspiration and more ideas up on that page. So if people follow that page, then please feel free to submit your own recipes and own little tips and tricks for using some of these waste products.
Oh, it's all about community, Jordan. Now, I have to ask you before I let you go, this listener says, I find leather jackets way too tough to eat. Have you got any, I know you're the marine scientist and not the chef, but have you got any ideas on the leather jacket for this person?
Yeah, so you could try steaming the leather jacket, and it definitely shouldn't be tough. That will be about the cooking time. So if you find things are tough, just try and reduce the cooking time down till it's just cooked through and it should be a lot more tender.